Malpractice and bar discipline may not be the same. Today, Ed will be talking with Cindy Shapiro. Cindy is a partner at Raybeck, McAndrews, Kjaer, Warfer, Stockalper, and Moore, LLP. She's practiced professional liability defense since 1994. Her practice includes defending professionals from malpractice and related claims. Our conversation today will focus on risk management to prevent lawyers from getting involved in the first place. An ounce of prevention is much better than a pound of cure.
Today I have the pleasure of talking with Cindy Shapiro, an attorney who deals with malpractice issues and disciplinary matters for lawyers. Cindy, thanks for joining us today.
It is my pleasure to participate in this. Thank you for inviting me.
One of the issues I think that confuse many people, particularly lawyers, is that there is a belief that malpractice and state bar disciplinary proceedings are the same. In California, we've heard a lot recently about the disciplinary system in the state because of the firing of the executive director and also, if memory serves me correctly, the chief trial counsel who handles the disciplinary system. Explain for us, please, what the precise differences are between a claim of malpractice, which probably is not heard by the state bar trial court, and the disciplinary system itself.
Happy to do so. There are occasions where they do go hand in hand. A malpractice claim is a civil lawsuit where a disgruntled former client sues a lawyer in superior court or in federal court for legal malpractice and related claims. Often breach of fiduciary duty is one of them. And that's where they go down, they file a lawsuit with the court, pay their fees, and the case gets litigated. And the lawyer usually has a lawyer, and the former client usually has a lawyer, and discovery ensues, and motions are done, and, you know, in my world, oftentimes the cases go away, either by settlement or by dispositive motion, or they go to trial and result in a verdict.
Now, in some of those cases, the issues that are being litigated also could bring, but not necessarily, the lawyer before the state bar disciplinary system. And I might offer for our listeners the fact that, at least as far as I know, still the case is that California has the most significant and sophisticated trial court system for against lawyers exclusively. And so the disciplinary system is very much different than the malpractice system.
You are correct about that. The disciplinary system is independent of a legal malpractice claim. A lot of times, disgruntled former clients, in addition to filing a legal malpractice suit where they're seeking monetary compensation, they may also file with the State Bar of California a complaint. And you can go onto the California State Bar website, and there are links which allow you to get to the forms that you fill out if you want your lawyer reported to the State Bar of California.
Let me ask you this question. To what degree will a, as you say, a disgruntled client perceive that he or she doesn't have the funds to file a lawsuit for malpractice and cannot get a lawyer to take it on a contingency to go after another lawyer?
That's a difficult question to answer because I only see the cases that make their way to litigation. Most lawyers who prosecute legal malpractice cases from a civil perspective take those cases on a contingency.
But in other words, if the client cannot get a lawyer to take it on a contingency basis,
sometimes they file in pro per, which means they're representing themselves. I would say approximately a third of my cases involve a plaintiff acting in, we call it in pro persona. here. Some people call it pro se. And so there are a significant number of cases, I would say, where the disgruntled former client goes ahead and either prosecutes on their own or they make a claim with the insurance company, and some of those cases actually never see a courtroom because the insurance company may decide that it is cheaper and easier to resolve the case before a lawsuit gets filed.
That's a matter of economics, and I understand that, and I think our listeners do as well. But what I'm trying to get at is if the client doesn't go for a malpractice action, that's not the end of the story because they could file a complaint against the lawyer with the state bar.
Absolutely. And the state bar of California generally will take more seriously complaints by clients or former clients than they will complaints by others. For example, I imagine that probably some of my opposing counsels have reported me to the state bar for things that they thought that I did inappropriately. I have never received notification, meaning that the state bar takes a look at the complaint and decides that it's not even worth pursuing. And so those cases get closed without the lawyer ever even knowing that a complaint has been filed. And that can happen if a former disgruntled client files a claim with the State Bar of California. If the State Bar determines that either the complaint is insufficient or is not a violation of the Code of Professional Conduct or not a violation of the lawyer's ethical duties to the former client, they will sometimes not pursue it, and so we don't know.
The issue there, I think, aside from the substantive evaluation, is whether the disciplinary system, the trial counsel at the state bar, perceives that the filing with the state bar is merely a negotiating tactic or harassment rather than a legitimate claim.
That's probably true. There are certain issues that become, I would say, hotbed issues with the State Bar of California. For example, if a former disgruntled client files a claim with the State Bar and says, I didn't get my money, they tend to take those things seriously. If a disgruntled former client files something saying, I asked for my file and my lawyer refused to give it to me, those kinds of things the state bar will pay attention to. The other hotbed issues right now, there was a period of time when lawyers were starting to do, because of mortgage refinancing, there were a lot of lawyers who were advertising themselves as being able to negotiate, a better mortgage deal, and they were taking people's money and then they weren't doing anything. And that's a hotbed issue.
That was an interesting one, and one that I thought both the legislature and the state bar should have stayed away from, because there are laws already on the books for theft, for criminal interaction, and so forth. The state bar didn't need to do anything more than was already available for them to go after the people who made false claims, who took money and did no work, and so forth and so on. In the meantime, they really scared a lot of lawyers away from handling legitimate complaints by the consumers. But the issues, I guess what you're indicating in part, is that they change. The hot buttons change from time to time.
Correct.
And as a practicing lawyer, one needs not only to have an appropriate moral compass, but be attuned to the marketplace to, make sure that their processes, their systems inside their offices are appropriate, are handled well, and are done right.
Absolutely. agree and disagree with you on the mortgage refinance issue. I think that it's unfortunate, but the public's perception of lawyers is not a good one. People do not think of lawyers as necessarily being ethical and moral people. And when, you know, when the LA Times or some other large newspaper prints a lot of articles about lawyers who are taking advantage of these poor people who were looking for an opportunity to be able to keep their homes, and then there were lawyers who were taking their money and not doing anything, I think that because of the public perception of lawyers as being ambulance chasers and dishonest, I think the state bar should be involved to some degree in that kind of issue.
Oh, I agree. There's no doubt about that. All I'm suggesting is that the state bar didn't need to react in the way it did. The legislature did not need new legislation on the books. It was already there, and it just needed enforcement. But that's a whole different issue, and we don't need to discuss that here.
Frankly, it took away a lot of resources that the State Bar of California had that may have been better used elsewhere.
What I want to address now is what, from a preventive point of view, can and should a lawyer do to, A, address the issue of potential malpractice, and, B, address the issue of the state bar knocking on the door and coming in. By the way, the lawyer, am I correct, cannot refuse the state bar investigator if they knock on the door?
Correct. You are correct.
It's not like a criminal investigation that you need a search warrant. If the state bar comes knocking, you have to open up everything. And once they do come knocking, they are not limited to one issue.
It depends on the issue. I know that the state bar does have a right of subpoena power, and they will go in with a subpoena more if there's a criminal aspect involved. And so they will coordinate with the attorney general, with the, you know, city prosecutor, with someone who has criminal enforcement powers.
Well, we're not talking about crimes right now.
Right.
We're talking about professional conduct and negligence.
And there is overlap sometimes. You know, there are lawyers who steal their clients' money. One of the interesting things that we have started to see more of, people who hang out a shingle who are not licensed lawyers, particularly in the field of immigration, the State Bar of California does not have jurisdiction over those people. So that ends up just being a criminal issue, except for when there's a situation where a lawyer lends his or her bar number and allows an office to be opened up under their name. And that can be the overlap with criminal and state bar issues. You had asked me a question earlier, an A and a B, and the A question was how to avoid getting sued for malpractice. The B question was how to avoid getting in trouble with the State Bar of California. My first and strongest recommendation is that all lawyers in whatever state they practice should take out the Code of Professional Conduct, because there are statutory laws in every state that I know of that outline what a lawyer's obligations, responsibilities, duties, what they're prohibited from doing, what they're not prohibited from doing. And usually the Code of Professional Conduct is not very long. I think every lawyer should take out and read the Code of Professional Conduct. I think every lawyer should at least once a month go onto their state bar website, because most of them put up new recommendations or opinions, ABA opinions or state bar opinions, that help guide lawyers as to what is acceptable and what is not acceptable behavior, at least from a state bar perspective. So that's my first recommendation. in terms of avoiding getting sued for malpractice, the number one, probably the most important thing is to make sure and keep your client updated. I recommend that you do it in writing. If you and your client have a difference in strategy, make sure you put in writing what your proposed strategy is, why you think it's the correct strategy, and why your client is refusing to go along with your strategy. In other words, CYA.
Well, at that point, I would encourage the client, that is the lawyer, the lawyer is usually my client, I would encourage the lawyer to withdraw. If the client is not willing to accept your advice, there's a miscommunication somewhere and an inability to continue down the road.
Sometimes that's true. Sometimes it's a small issue, a small enough issue where it doesn't make that, you know, I don't want to spend the money for you to take this deposition. That's the kind of thing that it's a judgment call. But either way, keeping your clients advised in writing, by telephone, even if you do some kind of law that involves contingency practice, I would strongly urge people to keep some sort of billing records and to keep a record of all monies that are spent, because usually even if it's contingency, the client is responsible for the costs that are incurred, and that needs to be spelled out in the retainer agreement.
One of the interesting things is, and where I think malpractice issues and disciplinary issues overlap, is that the number one complaint for years, and I think is still true, against lawyers with a disciplinary system is the failure to return a phone call. And to me, that is economic suicide, not because they're going to get in trouble with the state bar, but because you need to know what the client wants. You need to understand the direction of the matter. Client may have some important information for you. You need to stay in touch with the client. And equally important, returning a phone call oftentimes, if not always, leads to new business. And it's economic suicide.
Absolutely agree. When you are someone's lawyer, even though you probably shouldn't be, you end up being their therapist, and you end up being their friend.
Absolutely.
Your role is not just lawyer. And if your client feels like they're being ignored, you're not returning their phone calls, you're not responding to their emails, they don't feel as though they're getting what they're paying for, and they're more likely to be angry with you, and they're more likely to feel like they're being taken advantage of. So many malpractice suits, many state bar complaints can be avoided by simply returning phone calls, responding to emails. If you can't do it right away, send a quick email to your client and say, I'm out of the office today. When is a good time for us to talk?
Good advice. Good advice. Cindy, unfortunately, we're limited in time. I want to thank you very much for your joining us today, and I hopefully look forward to your being able and willing and gracious enough to come back to our table and talk more.
I would be honored, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much, Cindy. Have a good day.
You too.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. You can read more about this and other topics from the business of law at www.lawbizblog.com, or start your own discussion about this topic at www.lawbizforum.com. Join today. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.